Hello, everyone, and welcome to 50 Now What? I'm your host, Alicia Sutton. In today's episode, I welcome Ingrid Green to educate us on sickle cell anemia and spread the word about the work she does on the disease with the American Red Cross. Ingrid walks us through exactly what sickle cell anemia is, how it affects those that have it, how it's currently treated, and what work is currently being done to improve those treatments. We also discuss the current stigmas surrounding giving blood in the African-American community and why making the decision to give blood could be the difference in life or death for someone experiencing a sickle cell pain crisis. This is a deeply informative episode about a disease we could all know more about. Let's jump into it. Well, hi, Ingrid. Welcome, and thank you for joining us on the 50 Now What podcast. Today is a really interesting and informative topic for me as we discuss sickle cell disease. You don't hear much about sickle cell, and most people, at least the people who probably should know, don't necessarily know much about it or know of it. And admittedly, I, even knowing about sickle cell, thought that it had become rare and likely close to extinction through evolution somehow, I guess. So when I learned that I was wrong, that it is still here with us, it triggered first my nerd reflex. You know how that goes. I'm like, okay, I want to know more about that, and went into a rabbit hole about it, but mostly heightened my awareness to the urgency of the blood storage levels that we have and the lack of availability of blood for sickle cell patients and for a lot of people, as it were, for right now. So I wanted to have you on here to discuss that with us. So, but before we go into all of our information, I know you locked and loaded. I know you got it ready. I know you're ready. Tell our listeners a little bit about you and how this journey led you to become a part of the American Red Cross family and made this part of your life's work.
Sure. So I've been with the Red Cross now a little over 2 years. Most of my experience has been in corporate America and outside sales. And due to company reorganizations and things like that, after 29 plus years in working for one company, my position, along with other positions, was no longer there. And so I was left out into the job market again after that long trying to find a job. And so what I did was I really had to sit down and think. I said, you know, now I'm in my 50s and what am I going to do for the rest of my career? And I really want to do something that's fulfilling. And I want to do something that I enjoy doing and make money, of course. So I started doing some other things. I did some insurance selling and things like that. But I ran across this position on LinkedIn for the American Red Cross for sickle cell account manager. And although I did not know a lot about sickle cell at the time, but I've always been interested in sickle cell. And from the description of the job description, it just seemed like it would be a great opportunity for me to utilize my background in sales, working with people, and as well as being able to give back to the community and help. And that was really important. And so I applied for the position, and it was funny because really I forgot I applied. It was so long before they called me for an interview. And I get a call, and I interviewed, and couple of weeks later, I interviewed again. Then I got another call that I got the position. So I was really excited. And it's been a great job for me and just going out into the community. So I'm just really excited. Every day I wake up excited as to what can I do to help someone in the community.
I absolutely love that. And, you know, on our podcast here, we're big about synchronicity. We kind of feel like you're always kind of where you are and where you need to be because that's where you're supposed to be. And when I first met you, you were giving a presentation about sickle cell. And that's where I kind of had my, I don't know as much about this as I thought I knew. You know what I mean? And I, like I said, I thought we was past sickle cell. What's going on? And I said, yeah, this is why you're in the place you're supposed to be, where you're supposed to be. And now you're here with us to continue to spread that community information as we need it. So let's just jump right into our we'll start with what I'll just call the sickle cell disease 101. We'll just jump right in with some of the history and, you know, the people who have it, and I'll let you go with it.
Okay. So sickle cell anemia actually is the number one genetic blood disorder disease that's inherited. It's the number one blood disorder disease. And when I say this, because a lot of people are not familiar with sickle cell outside of the African-American community, when I tell them that it is the number one genetic blood disease disorder, they're like, really? And we haven't heard about it? We don't know about this? But yes, it is. And sickle cell has been around for thousands of years, the trait as well. But sickle cell disease, your red blood cells are abnormally shaped. It affects your red blood cells. A normal person with regular blood cells, their red blood cells are round and soft, so that your cells are going through your body, through the valves in your body, to provide oxygen and nutrients that your body needs to survive. But when you have sickle cell, you have abnormally shaped blood cells that are mixing with your normal blood cells. And they're shaped like a sickle. Therefore, that's how I got his name, sickle cell. And what happens is that as those cells try to flow through your body to bring in those nutrients and oxygen that's needed, it can't because it's shaped odd and it can't fit. And what happens is that those abnormally blood-shaped cells stacks up. And when that happens, that's when a patient experiences what they call a pain crisis, extreme pain crisis. Unfortunately, there is not a medical cure right now for sickle cell disease. There's been advances out in the medical community, but there is not a cure yet, unless you're able to receive a bone marrow transplant. And as we know, bone marrow transplant is very difficult to find a match, especially if you're a minority trying to find a match. And so the only thing that can alleviate a patient that has sickle cell during these pain crises is a blood transfusion. But in order to have a blood transfusion to work, you really need blood from someone of a similar ethnicity or race for the blood. And that's where we as African Americans come in, because of the fact that, unfortunately, with the American Red Cross, African Americans less than 4% of the American Red Cross donor base. Yes. So there are times when a sickle cell patient is rushed to the hospital in need of a blood transfusion, and they have to wait because the blood is not there. And a lot of time it could be a matter of life or death.
Wow. And you know, it's funny, as you know, I gave blood over the weekend, and I can tell you I felt really proud about it. You know, I got my card. I kind of felt like, okay, you know, it was really a dose of confidence and pride to be able to do that. But, you know, there are reasons why people don't necessarily give blood. Do you know, amongst African-American communities, especially, is there a reason why we don't have as high of a number of people giving blood?
Yeah, unfortunately, in the African-American community, you know, there's a lot of misconception about donating blood. Also, with the history that African-Americans have experienced medically, for example, one of the challenges I get when I'm talking about donating blood is, well, you know what happened, what they did to us with the Tuskegee experiment, things like that. And then over the years and families, you hear these stories and you are very hesitant to trust. And there's a trust level there. And it's our job at the American Red Cross. We do understand that. And with the history of what's happened in the past, even with the American Red Cross at one time, the blood was segregated. There was Black blood, there was Caucasian blood, and the blood was segregated. And so a lot of that is still with a lot of people, and that keeps them and make them hesitant from donating as well. And just the fact as well is that they don't realize that your blood is important and that your blood can save a life. And that's when the education part comes in, to explain to them why your blood is special, or you would call it why you have the unicorn blood that can save a life.
Is there a way that, you know, we understand where the concerns come from? They come from very legitimate circumstances that have occurred, historical incidents that have occurred, and experiences that you may individually have had within the healthcare system. How can we better, like, for example, like, I'm like trying to tell everybody, you know what, I gave blood. So, you know, it wasn't all bad. It was actually fine. And again, there was a dose of pride that comes with that as well. What is the history, a part of the history with regards to sickle cell? How long has it been around and where was it discovered?
So sickle cell actually has been around for thousands of years. What a lot of people don't realize is that sickle cell, the trait, was actually a positive thing. And it helped save your life. Because what sickle cell trait did and does, it fought your body against malaria. And so just throughout, just over evolution, thousands of years, it turned into, you know, now the sickle cell disease. But it really turned into, it was something positive. It was a fighter against malaria. But it wasn't until 1910 that the first discovery of sickle cell was mentioned in Western Medical Journal. And what happened was in 1910, a Chicago physician had a patient. It was a young dental student from the Caribbean, actually. And he was suffering from pain crisis and he was severely anemic. And so this physician, when he drew his blood and looked through the microscope, he noticed that his blood was had some abnormally shaped, which was sickle cell. And that was the first time it was ever mentioned in Western Medical Journal in the United States. And so when you look at that, you know, that really 1910 wasn't really that long ago. And can you imagine all the people, thousands of millions of people that suffered with sickle cell before then? But yeah, but so that's why another question was asked too, is that why is it that sickle cell affects primarily people, African-Americans? And people, some people may think, is sickle cell a Black disease? And I'm using air quotes. And no, it really isn't a Black disease, but we tend to focus on African-Americans, especially in the United States, because it does primarily affect African-Americans, but sickle cell can affect people from the Mediterranean, Turkey, Greece, India. So they are affected as well. And you wonder why they can be affected when you think of malaria and those continent and countries around there, Africa's malaria. So it can affect them as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we think about it here because we're just thinking about it here in the U.S. as a Black disease. But when you take it outside of that, because, you know, we're living in a much more global culture and society. So when you come outside of here, and again, when we talk about mixing and blending, you really not quite sure where you could fall on that spectrum in terms of whether or not you've had the exposure or actually carry the trait.
Yeah, exactly. You know, South and Central America as well, because one out of 16,500 babies born to Hispanic mothers have sickle cell disease as well. It's a much larger number, but yes, in the Hispanic community, you can have sickle cell as well.
Wow. Well, I'm glad we got that. That is some key information. And that's why I wanted to do this, because, you know, we can always call it, like you said, within our air quotes, Black disease. But when you look at the broader scope of a lot of things, we really are connected in ways that we don't really know. And what affects some can affect us all.
Exactly.
People with sickle cell, do we know how many people in the population suffer from sickle cell? Is it something that they track? Is there a number that we have about how many are affected?
So it's an estimate, approximately over 100,000 African-Americans in the United States is living with sickle cell disease. And unfortunately, the exact number is not known because there is not a national registry for sickle cell like other conditions. Now, there is a patient registry that a sickle cell patient can go on and they can register themselves, but it's not something that's regulated or nationally handled. So that's why we don't know the true exact number. And then being that one out of 12 babies born to African-American mothers is born with the sickle cell trait, and one out of 365 babies are actually born with the sickle cell disease. So you can see why the numbers are there. We just don't know the exact number, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah, and just with the statistic that you just gave, it's like, it seems like that number, the 100,000, is still running fairly low. You know what I mean? It would still be a low number. So it's just not being feasibly tracked. Do people with sickle cell tend to lead normal lives overall? Are they just living their day to day, or are they sickly all the time? How is that?
The thing about sickle cell too is that sickle cell affects everyone differently. So it's not the type of disease that, say, for example, if let's say you had sickle cell and I had sickle cell. And so if you have sickle cell, these are the symptoms that you're going to have when you have this disease. Sickle cell doesn't operate that way. I can have sickle cell and it can affect my kidneys. It can affect my organs. You can have sickle cell to where you're just severely anemic, or it didn't affect your organs, but you had a stroke or you had a heart attack. So it affects people differently, unfortunately. So that's why it's so important that you're educated on sickle cell, because you just don't know how it affects individuals, because everyone is affected differently from it. But you can live a normal life as long as you're not having a pain crisis. But if you ever known anyone that had sickle cell growing up, especially kids, you notice those were the kids that didn't play outside. They didn't play sports. They didn't do a lot of activities because of their condition. Now, you know, they can lead more to normal lives unless they have a pain crisis, and that will keep them down, or they're in the hospital for a certain amount of time until they get that blood transfusion and become to feel normal again.
Do you know of any additional research that's being done with regards to sickle cell in terms of maybe being able to treat it without blood transfusions? Do we know of anything like that in terms of progress in the research?
So there have been a lot of medical advances in trying to help patients that suffer from sickle cell. In December of last year, it made the news. It's not a cure, but it's really proven to be helpful to where sickle cell patients are not having pain crisis. It's not curing sickle cell, but what it does, it is eliminating them from having pain crisis. It's called CRISPR. And what it does is that, this is just a basic scenario because I am not the expert at this and I'm still learning about it. But from what I understand, what it does is that it edits your DNA, and that part of the DNA that has that sickle cell part in it, it's cut and they edit it. And so it has been proven so far that patients in case studies, they have gone maybe like a year or so without any pain crisis. But it's still a lot of research to be done. And it has a very healthy price tag on it. It's about $1 to $2 million to even get it.
Oh, wow.
So let's say it is available, it is working, but then look at that price tag. Who's going to be able to afford it?
Right. Nobody.
And yeah, hopefully if it does prove to be very successful, that maybe, you know, with the government or whatever can step in to help families to be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, to me, the realistic part of that is that looks like it's a long way off in terms of the reality of having it broadly available. So it looks like we're still back to making sure that there's a blood available.
We are, yes. Believe me, a lot of people are very excited on social media. They say it's a cure, but it really is not a cure. But it is helping those patients and those case studies to eliminate pain crisis. How long would that last? We don't know yet because it's still so new.
Right, right. So it looks like we're still back to needing the blood.
We need the blood when it comes, yes.
We need the blood.
We need the blood.
We need the blood. Can they receive blood from anyone? I mean, if it comes down to it, I mean, because we want everyone to give blood, but do you have to have it from someone who is African-American? If it all comes down to it, can you get blood from anyone if you need it?
So answer to your question is yes and no. I get asked this at times from other donors or the people to say, you know, I'm not African-American, but if I have the same blood type as that person that needs blood, why can't we just use my blood if we have the same blood type? Well, you don't want to do that because of the fact that your body would start to reject that, because you really need blood from someone of a similar ethnicity. And what happens is that because sickle cell patients need so many blood transfusion, if you're getting blood that's not for someone of a matched ethnicity, your body would start to reject it. it will even make you sicker. So that's why it's so important that if you're of African descent, to be able to donate blood, to use that, a similar ethnicity. Now, another reason why is that one out of three, even though we need blood from African Americans or African descent, one out of three African Americans or descent is a match for a patient with sickle cell disease. And that's because one out of three carry that's a special antigen that's needed for a sickle cell patient when they need a blood transfusion. And it's called a CEK negative antigen. Not all of us have that antigen. So that's another reason why we really need to increase donors of African descent, because all of us do not carry that.
Okay. So it still pares down to an even smaller subgroup. So
yes, it does.
Even though, okay, so it still narrows it down further and further and further. Wow.
If you have that CEK negative antigen, your blood is an ideal match for a sickle cell patient for a blood transfusion.
Got it. Now, what about, speaking of taking blood from anyone else, is there a difference with, say, mixed race individuals? I mean, we're blending now. I mean, there's a lot of blending, especially, you know, everywhere you go, that's a lot of blending. Should you be concerned about, you know, having the trait if you are mixed race? Is there still a probability of that if you're a mixed race?
There's a big probability, yes. And I'm glad you asked that question, because being that, especially living in California, we're mixed. We're a really big melting pot. And we have, you know, individuals mixed with, you know, Caucasian, African-American, and other ethnicities as well. But just because, let's say you have one parent that's African-American and one parent that's of another race, that doesn't keep you safe from having sickle cell trait, because you can get it. I actually have a coworker. She's a Caucasian and her husband is African American. They have two boys, and one of her boys have the sickle cell trait. So it's so important that you get tested if you have any kind of African heritage in you, to get tested, because you can't carry that trait. So this little boy, although he's biracial, and let's say he marries someone, and let's say he marries someone with the trait, he has the trait, then there's a big possibility that their children or child may have the sickle cell disease.
Wow. Well, let's talk a little bit about trait. When we talk about sickle cell trait, what exactly is having sickle cell trait?
So sickle cell trait really means that you are a carrier. In order to get sickle cell disease, both parents must carry the trait. So that's why it's so important to know your sickle cell status. And that's one of the things that the American Red Cross, when we implemented the Sickle Cell Initiative in 2021, one of the things they did was, if you self-identify as African American or African descent, when you donate blood, we will run a sickle cell trait testing on your blood, because there are still a lot of people walking around childbearing age that has the trait and don't know it. So in August, because of the fact that it can affect mixed individuals, so in August of last year, we even opened it up to multiracial. If you identify as multiracial, we will run that sickle cell trait testing on your blood as well.
Okay, wonderful. And kids born now all get tested for sickle cell when they're born. Am I correct?
Yes, but you know, you'd be surprised, because sickle cell has been around for so long. It wasn't until 1975 that they even started testing for newborn babies for sickle cell. And New York was the first state to do that testing. And that was in 1975. And from 1975 until 2006, that it was sporadically tested in different states. But I'm just trying to find the exact year, because I just want to be accurate when I tell you. Yes. So in 2006, that's when universal NBS, that's newborn screening for the sickle cell trait testing, began on all babies, regardless of ethnicity. And it was mandatory in all 50 states. But that was just in 2006. That's only like 30 something years ago.
2006? So we're talking like 16 years, just about 16 years ago. Wow. I didn't know that.
before 2006, many states were still not testing newborns for the trait, which is why there were so many babies born with sickle cell and they didn't know it. But California started screening for the babies with trait in February 27, 1990. So that's when California implemented across the board to every newborn baby, regardless. And that was only about 35 years ago. And that may account why there are so many sickle cell trait carriers that don't realize that they carry that trait if they were born before then.
Right. They wouldn't.
Right.
They wouldn't. If you weren't born in New York in 1975, you probably would not know that. That is some very interesting data to know and to have, which is why, again, when I think about that number, I'm like, yeah, that number is probably well off. And is it possible? And again, this is very hypothetical in that it's possible, like you said, depending on the way your body deals with the sickle cell, if you do have it, you could go on for, you know, if you're a child, I guess maybe not now, but back then you could go for years not even knowing that your diagnosis was sickle cell, or you could be sick and not really know. Or
so the sickle cell pain crisis can start as young as a baby in 6 months old. And if you don't know that your baby has sickle cell and all of a sudden your baby is in just extreme pain, crying, you don't know what's wrong with your baby, that's when you find out your baby has sickle cell disease. So it's 6 months, usually the earliest that they can receive their first pain crisis suffering from sickle cell.
Oh, that just breaks my heart.
It really does break your heart.
That breaks my heart. Well, we're doing what we can to get the word out and to encourage, and just to clarify, the blood shortage is across the board.
Yes, yes. So the blood shortage is pretty much across the board. And what accounts for that shortage is, you know, we've had within the past years, we've had a lot of disasters. We had a lot of emergency to where blood was needed. And so the American Red Cross put out an appeal for a shortage to alerting the community that we need blood. When we started the appeal in January, I think we were about 40% short to where we should be on a national level. But we've done very well. And I believe that the appeal will be over, if it's not already over now, so that we've have been able to increase our blood supply. But we still always need blood. And one of the things with the American Red Cross, what we've done, because what's so important when working with African-American within the African-American community, is that what we wanted to do was to bring the blood drive to their community, because they have blood drives at the different places. But a lot of times with the African-American community, if it's not in their community, they're not going to go. And we want it to be to where it's easy for them to go and donate. And so what the American Red Cross has done is that we've partnered with a lot of the civic organizations, the African-American civic organizations, such as NAACP, 100 Black Men, the D9 organizations, the historically Black fraternities and sororities, to host blood drives and to go out into the community to ask African-Americans to donate. And it's been working. It's really great. We've had, since we started, the increase of first-time African-American donors. I just had a blood drive this past weekend. The Zeta Rho chapter, Omega Psi Phi, part of their foundation, we did a blood drive. And from that blood drive, we collected 30 units, which is really good. And out of that 30 units, 13 of those units were first-time donors.
Right. Me being one of them. That's the drive I was at out at Charles Drew. Brought back some nostalgia for me out there at Charles Drew University and King Drew, the Martin Luther King Hospital. So I was glad to be there. And it was really good to see the turnout that we had. And hopefully that we'll continue to do stuff like that. So I'm super excited about it. Did you have anything else that you want to share about sickle cell? I'll just let you have the floor.
I just want to really stress the importance that we as a community to help support each other and to help save each other's lives. I always, when I talk to do presentations in the high schools, and I try to get them to really understand why it's important. And one of the things I ask the students, you know, I said, who all thinks Black Lives Matter? And everyone, you know, they raised their hands up. Yeah, Black Lives Matter. You know, I was walking and protesting. And I said, well, one way that you can really make a difference in saving a Black life is to donate blood, because your blood is needed.
I love that. I love that. Very good. Very good. All right. Well, thank you. So was there any additional words of wisdom that you have? Or
the only words of wisdom I would say is the gift of blood is a gift to someone's life. And it doesn't matter what race or ethnicity you are.
Wow. That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Ingrid, for those lovely words of wisdom. We'll leave that just right there. Thank you so much. And for our listeners, you can refer to this episode's show notes on how you can save lives by giving blood to the American Red Cross. Thank you again, Ingrid.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to 50 Now What? A special thank you to Ingrid for joining us. Be sure to click on the links in our show notes for more resources and information regarding sickle cell disease. Make sure to follow us, rate, and share the show. Make sure to follow me on Instagram for continuous updates at 50 Now What Podcast. That's 50 Now What Podcast. This podcast was produced by Rainbow Creative, with Matthew Jones as senior producer, Stephen Selnick as producer, and Rob Johnson as editor and audio engineer. I love working with this team. To learn more about making a podcast for you or your business, visit them at rainbowcreative.co.